Lively play, still Baltimore. Lifts it in, it's a great ball, it's a super goal! No surprise that Maria Antoinette Catoto was on the end of it. Wonderful win play. And a sensational finish.
Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Courtney Stiff. Courtney, how are you?
Fine. It's Wednesday. Actually, today was so much warmer than like it's been previously that I was actually really hot and sweaty because I didn't know what to do in above freezing temperature.
I'm going to tell you like this. We've had so much snow on the ground because we had like that back to back, like, oh, you might get a couple inches. And every now and then, like every 10th year or so, you know, they'll come out and be like, oh, we're going to get like 3 to 5 inches. Then we get nothing. And then every now and then, like every 10th year, there's all of a sudden, oh, we're expecting 1 to 2. And we get absolutely like smashed with it. Like there was, I think it was probably close to 5 inches dropped twice in maybe like 4 days.
And, really?
Yeah. And like earlier today. Now, it was late yesterday because it had just started to melt a bit more. I was like, I can see the ground. And I got so happy.
What? Yeah. You genuinely got more snow than New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, I didn't want it.
We got, to be fair, I've been at my parents' house this entire time and we've gotten more snow than the city. But like, I think the first time we probably got like 3-ish inches, maybe 4. And then the next time it snowed, it was also like another 3 inches, but like it had kind of like rained in between. So like some of it went away. So there's like genuinely not a lot of snow on the ground. But I could tell it was warmer when I walked outside in soccer shorts, as I do when I go to physical therapy, because I don't feel like changing. And I'm just like, it's like an ice. It's like I'm getting rid of the swelling before I go. It's icing in real time. And I was like, oh, it's actually quite nice outside. Which is also I felt when I left PT on Monday, and when I got in, it was 22 degrees. When I left, it was 30. So I was like, I'm sunny, and I was like, oh, it's nice. Take off my coat. And I was like, you imbecile, it's still under freezing.
Yeah, absolutely not. That sounds awful. And shout out to you, I guess, for if I wore shorts, no, absolutely no. I hate being cold. I cannot tell you, it bothers me so much. I don't know why. It's like a personal affront. Like I get really physically upset. Like it ruins my entire mood. I get so mad whenever I'm cold and I hate it so much. So like me in winter don't vibe. Like if I'm hot, I'll be like, damn, it's hot. But if I'm cold, I'm like, this shit is fucking annoying. I get so mad.
You're like, I'm just absolutely ruined my day.
Yeah, it's bad.
I genuinely can only do it with shorts. Like I could not do the same with like a short sleeve shirt or a t-shirt or something. Like if my arms are cold, I'm like, I'm frigid. But I think it's from playing soccer and rowing crew that like I'm kind of used to like my legs being out a little bit. To be fair, I have gotten scolded by 3 separate people being like, put on a pair of sweatpants. And I'm like, I'll survive. It's a literal 5-minute walk to my car, and it's not even full 5 minutes. It's because it takes me like a solid 3 minutes to get down 4 stairs. Like that's why it takes long. I'm literally just like walking. I'm not even walking 10 feet from the door to my parents' house to my car. And then, you know, you turn on the heat warmer, you turn on your seat warmer, gets warm. But yeah, for
now,
some
I'm gonna
reason,
tell you that 5-minute walk is 5 minutes too long.
But the thing is, you have to realize I'm also wearing like a massive puffy coat and a hat on my head and gloves. Like I'm fully
so everything fully dressed. Should match is what I'm saying. If that's how the top looks, the bottom can't be shorts is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but see the thing is it takes so much energy for me to try to like take off pants with the state of my knee that's why I started wearing them. I was like just gonna rock it with some shorts a little bit. And that's what I do. I just rock a little pair of shorts. I get in the car. And it's only burned me once where it was like 22 degrees, but then the wind started blowing. And that's when I was like, I've made a grave mistake. But that's only happened once out of like 7 or 8 PT sessions. So I feel like I'm fine.
Well, shout out to you for being brave. Not I. Won't ever catch me like that. But let's get into it. We need to get into the rest of the episode. So we got a review first, like we always do. Then we're going to let y'all know what we're going to chat about and then get to it. But first, reviews. We love it when y'all review the podcast, rate and review the podcast. If you haven't done it, please do it. It really helps the podcast grow. Also, you know, makes us feel good. You know, get 5 stars, get a nice little review, nice little commentary about what we've done. And speaking of this, Nicholas Soccer, shout out to you for dropping a review 3 days after Christmas. Must have been in the Christmas spirit because it's a very nice review. So thank you so much. It starts out, it's a little bit long, but here we go. That's where United fills a gap in the media landscape with humor, context, and hope. Thank you. In a space often centered around white athletes and traditional fan bases, Andre and Courtney shift the narrative to underrepresented and historically undervalued players, teams, and federations, ensuring there is a voice for everyone in women's football without being afraid to tackle big issues surrounding race, politics, social justice, and gender. This podcast demonstrates exceptional journalism that never fails to keep me thinking long after I finish their episodes. It's a must-listen in times of concern within the NWSL, ahead of international tournaments, and whenever you are looking for a smile. P.S. KC, baby, I'm going to add an asterisk to that. and also, go Bats. Dad joke is, what's the best state to shop for a soccer kit? I think we've done this one before.
New Jersey.
There it is. Yep, yep.
It's like when I, first of all, thank you, Nicholas, for the review. That is probably the nicest thing anyone has ever said about this podcast ever. We don't record video, even though maybe we should start, because I just started frowning in the middle because I was like, that is so nice. That is one of the nicest things I've ever heard in my entire life. So deeply appreciate it. And yes, I have heard the New Jersey joke, even though I... Come with me on this journey. I get like healthy Slim Jims, but they're chicken, not like mechanically separated pork or whatever Slim Jims are made out of. But I get the kids ones and they have jokes on the inside. And so I told one to my dad yesterday, but then he got it immediately. So I was like, not funny, but do you want to hear it?
Yes, of course. I would love to hear the healthy Slim Jim joke.
What's a tornado's favorite game?
Twister.
Yeah, it's like easy to get. It's like they're easy to get. I mean, they're literally for kids. But yeah, he got that in real time. And I was like, man, this is probably too easy. But there's another dad joke.
Thank you. Yeah, we love it. So dad jokes, please leave a review and leave a dad joke in the review. We'll read it.
Give Andre a middle name.
Giggle will be ridiculous. And yeah, that's what we do. So we really appreciate that. And again, thank you, Nick. That was a very kind review and we really appreciate it because that's basically everything you said there is what we try to do with this podcast from the jump and what we've tried to do. So I'll also say for people who won't know, the reason why I did an asterisk for the KC baby thing is just I don't know if I like how their front office gets down. We may talk about it later. We've talked about it on previous episodes, but that's all that is. No hate, no disrespect to you and the team you root for, but that's just where I come from. Okay, in this episode, we're going to talk about English WOSO wildness. Apparently, some wild things happened in England. Courtney, going to catch you up on what happened. We're also going to talk about the Champions League and how the madness of really day one. Got another day tomorrow, but that's fine.
I don't expect the second half of match day five to be chaos at all.
That's true, but it'd be hilarious. Now that we say that, watch Barcelona lose or something ridiculous like that. Then that'd be
hilarious. Hey, don't say that. I don't want people in my DMs, my comments.
Right. I doubt it'll happen, but you know, whatever. We're going to do an NWSL preseason vibe check because preseasons are starting around the league. And we're going to do heated and hyped and then get out of here. So, Courtney, anything else before we get started?
Nope.
So basically, here's the deal. Every now and then, my real job, my 9-to-5 job that I'm so gracious in how they allow me the freedom to do things that I do. If they happen to be listening, thank you so much. Also, stop listening. I'm going with this because basically all the stuff that happened in English women's football craziness that you mentioned here on the rundown, I only know about one of those things because I was not able to watch some of the other stuff that happened. So I'm going to pass it off to Courtney because she knows what was going on. And apparently a lot was going on.
Yeah, a lot did happen. Taking us back, I just want to quickly take us back to this past weekend. We actually saw there was a lot. The craziest game was that Tottenham West Ham 4-3 win.
Yeah, that was wild.
Which was just absolutely bonkers. But in that match, we saw we saw the WSL debut of Christy Mewis. And the crazy part of this is she was fighting the wind. To be fair, everyone was fighting the wind.
Before the fighting of the wind, did you like, honestly, this is no disrespect to Christy Mewis because I'm like happy that she's there. I think it's a cool move, even though West Ham is at the bottom of the table. Hopefully that doesn't stay that way for long. But like, did you hear every time she got on the ball, did you hear the screams?
No, I tend to watch games with the comp.
Okay, you know, you should just from the time she gets in, because I was like, I knew she was popular, but my bad, I didn't know she was that popular. Like the screams when she got in the ball. Right.
I didn't know your game, big man.
Right. I was like, hey, okay, y'all real hype about Christy Mewis at the kind of the end of her career moving to West Ham, but okay, I feel it. Okay.
Honestly, good for her, because that is a big move. And, you know, obviously she got an assist for, I believe, what was the game-tying equalizer. And then, unfortunately, Tottenham got a last-minute winner. So it would have been great if, like, you know, she comes, like, gets her debut, gets, a point-saving or a point-winning assist, and then ends in a tie. But, unfortunately, Tottenham got the fourth. But in the match, it was very – and, like, when they came in, they did set the stage, because I, like – listen to the first few minutes of comms and I turn it off and they're like, it's, you know, it's a wet and windy match here tonight. And you could see it. That wind was whipping. And there was a clip that went around that was hilarious of Christy trying to put the ball down for a corner kick, but the ball kept rolling away. The corner flag was rolling away. She had to ask the official, like, hey, can you hold the corner flag? And at first the official is like, no. And she's like, do you want me to take this corner? Like, I literally cannot do it with this wind whipping. And so it was a very, very funny moment. I'm sure you have seen it online. If you haven't, go watch those highlights. It's hilarious. But also, the funniest thing about that moment is we're laughing about the wind whipping, but Christy almost gets an Olympico.
Yeah, it was real close.
Like, she, like, went and, like, whipped that ball in. And I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Especially if it did go in after fighting the wind. But yes, that was just a moment of English football craziness. That was hilarious. Not a moment of craziness, but a moment of joy for Arsenal fans and for England fans, as we saw Leah Williamson get back on the pitch today for the first time in 280 days. I only know that because that number has been tweeted about 17,000 times since she touched the pitch. I was like, I've seen it in a number of tweets. 280 days. But yes, so it's been 280 days. Actually, Katie McCabe did something really nice when she came in and took off the armband and immediately put it on her. And I was like, oh, filios. And Arsenal beating Reading like 17-0. It was...
Poor Reading.
But also, another one got an assist, just a looping ball over the top. And I was like, oh, Serena's happy. Serena's definitely going to be happy about this, that she's back. And also, 280 days is exactly 9 months, which is kind of... It's not quick, but, like, I think it's a bit faster than we've seen people return for ACLs. Well, like, Beth Mead took an entire year, and Viv and Miedema also took almost an entire year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the thing to note about that is just it varies so much in women's footballers right now, which is sad and unfortunate, but you just don't know. Like, I'm pretty sure Kat's been out longer. I'm pretty sure Kristen Press has been out longer. Like, you just don't know. Like, the timeline varies so much in recovering from that. So glad to see she can be back on the pitch and competing in just 9 months. And hopefully that's the last big injury she can have, because it's brutal out there.
Yeah, and honestly, it is really varying, because, like, also thinking of a player like Ellie Carpenter came back, like, I don't want to say, like, quickly, because it's, like, normally ACL injuries, you're out for 9 months. We've just seen kind of an extended period of time for a lot of these players. So, but, yeah, she came back, and I know a lot of Arsenal fans are extremely happy about that. But in the last bit of crazy out of England today, so the Conti Cup happened. Shout out to probably, I would say, the first – this is not the crazy bit. This is a bit of celebration. But I'm going to argue or say – and someone please correct me if I'm wrong – this may or may not have been the first time that it was a black goalkeeper versus black goalkeeper in a club game in England between Manchester City and Manchester United. We had Fallon Toulouse-Joyce playing for United and Kiara Keating playing for Manchester City. Obviously, we love that because we love the black goalkeepers. Shout out to Brianna Scurry, but I feel like it's probably the first time that it might have happened in England. Besides Fallon balling out, she had a great match, even though they lost 2-1. She was fantastic, like, had three really big saves on Bunny Shaw. So I very much also expect her to see her at the next national team camp. Hello. So she's been fantastic. Please. And then Kiara Keating all on the other side has been an absolute monster this season, has been so, so good for Manchester City, and is probably one of the big reasons why they're currently sitting second in the table. But in the Conti Cup group, we learned recently that apparently, Aston Villa might have fielded an ineligible player in the Conte Cup this evening, which is
doesn't this feel like wild. It happens every single year in the Conte Cup? I don't understand why the rules are so complicated or why teams just do this.
Like, either for that in the Conte Cup or it's like... Also, it happened to Barcelona last season in the Copa de la Reina. Like, yeah. I feel like it's always someone like, oh, they fielded an ineligible player, and it's like, how did this happen? And so the English FA is going to affect that. And if it does, like, Manchester United could be affected. And if Aston Villa's points go to Sunderland, which has implications for them getting like their Conti Cup finishing and things like that. So that's been the day of English women's football wildness.
Yeah.
Well, technically the weekend, but.
Yeah, an extended time period. But, you know, that still is a lot to happen regardless of the weekend, extending to the weekend or not. But yeah, I missed some interesting stuff going on. So might have to go back and rewatch that Manchester United, Manchester City game. It sounds interesting. Okay, let's talk about the Champions League. And actually, before we talk about the Champions League, I want to talk about DAZN. I was on the struggle bus with DAZN, y'all. Like, I was super struggling. And
you're not the only one.
I was going to say, the good thing is I was tweeting and other people are like, yeah, this is a problem. So I don't think I want to recap the whole thing. But basically, and this is first off top, my fault for not reading further. I saw what they were doing. I saw that there was this, you know, they made a big, big deal about they're going to keep the Champions League games free. And I was like, yeah, you probably should, because trying to charge people after, like, this is not a competition. Like, women's sports leagues, women's sports competitions, the club competitions have not had the same type of promotion or, you know, marketing that you would expect from others. So you can't go straight to locking it down and charging people a bunch of money to watch it. And so it was really stupid that they tried and then pulled it back and acted like they were doing us a favor. And I was like, no, actually, probably doing yourselves a bit of a favor, because you're not going to have the numbers you want to do this. But anyway, they announced that and I was like, okay, cool. The games are going to be free. I didn't realize that some games are going to be on YouTube. Some games are going to be hosted on their site or through their app or whatever. So before the game, it was really the Roma-Bayern game that I was trying to watch. I was like, okay, whatever. I see. I got to register or whatever. Sign up. And I kept getting this error message. And I was like, okay, this is weird. So I thought maybe I just typed something wrong. Did it again. Got an error message. Like, okay, this is weird. Pull up another browser. Do the same thing. Same error message. Okay, this is weird. I'm on my work computer, so maybe I shouldn't do that. Like I said, if you're a coworker, stop listening. But then I went to my MacBook. And I was like, okay, let me try this. Same thing. Error message. Let me get on my phone. Same thing. Error message. And so then I was like tweeting about it. And they DM me. Great. And we're asking me, you know, like, okay, so what have you done so far? Here's what you need to do. And I was like, all right. So I'm chatting with people, you know, in the little chat thing, the customer service chat. Chat to two different people. Neither one of them could help me. They tell me to get to email somebody. They can't help me. And then when they do send an email back to me, they were like, oh, we see you don't have an account yet, so we can't help you. I'm like, I know, man. I'm trying to set up an account. So basically, I don't know what's going on with the app or whatever, but, and we might just share this in the show notes. Courtney sent a link. It was a different link than what I had used to register. It's not the link that if you just Google DAZN UWCL, it's not that same link apparently, but I went to the link, was finally able to do it. But DAZN people got no idea that there's a problem. They do now because I said something about it, but I ain't got no faith at all they're going to be able to fix it. But we'll put this link in the show notes. If you're struggling as well, please use that link. Let us know if it works. But I was finally able to get it and watch like the second half of the Chelsea game. But basically, I just been real hot about the situation because it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I was lucky in that I didn't have any issues with it. For the most part, like I literally, I ended up going to like DAZN football or like DAZN women's football because they have now those two Twitter accounts. And I like clicked on the link in their bio and then it like pushed me to it because I was, because at first, you know, I'm used to all those games being on YouTube. And so, you know, I went to YouTube and I was like, hello, because I went to look at the Roma Bayern game, or to watch, sorry, the Häcken Paris FC game and the Roma Bayern game at the same time. And I was like, okay, I see Häcken Paris FC, but I was like, where is the other match? And to be fair, when everyone was like hooplaing about like DAZN making it free, I honestly was probably busy at work and was not paying attention to what was going on. But I was just like, oh, the games are free. They'll still be on YouTube. Not, oh, they'll also be on a different platform. And I'm like, not another platform. I have so many platforms to watch football.
Right.
Between the men's and women's games. I don't want another platform. And like, that's just a conversation for another time, especially with the new NWSL deal. Me at trying to figure out how to find Ion, which I
right.
still haven't successfully done. And I know y'all will probably tweet me a link and I'll try my best, but that's for some reason Ion and I just like, it doesn't make sense in my brain. But someone was like, you know, I sent the link to someone and then they opened it on their, they tried to like open it on their TV. And when they, or they downloaded the DAZN app on their TV and the DAZN app on their TV was trying to make them sign up and pay $20. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just created an account and it was completely free. So I don't know if there's like a lot more like technological rollouts they need to do across their apps. Cause also like someone was like, I tried to open on my computer and it charged me $20, but then I could open it on my phone and it was free. And like, you know, it was all this stuff. So I think for the rollout of this, especially when previous group stage games were just on YouTube, I probably would have like kept them on YouTube, like at least until the end of the group stage. Or something like that, or just wait until next season and have like a helpful explainer, like one of them cute little explainer videos being like, how do I watch the UWCL on DAZN?
Yeah, but and that's the thing for me is it really shouldn't be that complicated. It's just first name, last name, email account, and a password. That's it. You ain't asking for a lot of information. That was it. And I was like, okay, quick, I can do this. Like even the FA player, as janky as that is, it was easy to sign up to that, and I can understand why DAZN, with all the money that they got, with all the stuff they do and all that they get from pay-per-view boxing and all of that, why they just can't have a simple process that works. I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. And also, I'm with you. Keep them on YouTube. That's where people went. I know you want the emails, but maybe next season, maybe.
The funny thing about FA Player is that it so rarely works with my phone. I like log in and it's fine. It's just like, no, I'm absolutely not working. And
oh,
it's like, okay,
yeah, I don't get it to work on nothing but my computer. But hey, that's fine.
Yeah, fine. It is what it is. Also, like Ada's player doesn't work on my phone ever. It just like hates it. I don't know. Paramount Plus also, not to drag my employer into this, half the time Paramount Plus only works on my phone or my computer. I'm just saying there are technological issues, but I think the struggle in which I saw people across the board having technological issues today, like obviously just put a, you know, a whole damper on it. Cause that Roma Bayern game, just to transition us, that 2-2 was absolutely insane. Like Roma gets super early goal. And it really just kind of seemed like their game plan was like score early and just like hunker down and hope to frustrate Bayern, which worked to like the 88th minute where all of a sudden Bayern equalizes. And then like, three minutes later, do you think Roma gets a go-ahead goal, which is like, boom, an important 3 points. Like, it's crucial for them because they play PSG next. They have to win right now to try to get through to the knockout round. But then Leah Schuler comes up again and just gets yet another, like, gets a brace on almost the last kick of the game. I think Roma might have had one more chance, like one or two more chances. And to be fair, there were big chances missed. Like one of them, it's not Gregi, it's like Gregi. It's like a soft G, which I can't remember how to say right now. Like all she had to do was put the ball on the floor instead of trying to put the ball in the air and skies it. Like it would have been 3-2 Roma. Cause, like the fact that Bayern had a break over the winter, like completely showed today. Like they looked super rusty. Like them playing out the back, Roma was like the few times where like Roma would pressure them, up, like when they're playing out the back, like they'd win the ball over super quickly. But then also at times, like, Roma fully switched off like that. The goal, I mean, the goal they scored, it's like someone needs to put some pressure on Pernilla Harder, who, like, swung the ball into Schuler. And Saki Kumagai, unfortunately, got, I think it might have been Saki. One of the Roma players got bodied on that ball, and it was like, oof, no ideal. But then even for the late equalizer, it was like, it's not ideal. And now Group C is really, really tight, because PSG came back in flying form today against Ajax. Like, Maria Antoinette Katoto said, forget it. Did you forget about me? Forget about me? Fully. And it's like, first of all, no, queen, I never forgot. I think about you all the time. However, and she never gets enough shine. She never gets the shine and respect that she deserves, which is insane, because she scores an insane amount of goals. But between her and Tabita Shawinga today, they were absolutely eating that Ajax back line. Just carnivorous. Slicing and dicing.
Yeah, it was interesting because PSG had not looked really good all season. I know that, like, getting your primary goal scorer back will do things to you. Like, things will change a little bit. So I am glad to see Katoto back. You know, we talked about Williamson returning from an ACL injury. Katoto just did the same thing, and it looks like she's back, like, to her actual form. We saw her, what, she split out wide, received a through ball, scored, which is something that you want to see, being able to create separation on the run, you know, off the ball, which is something you want to make sure that she has, you know, after, because that's what she had before the injury. And then I believe, what, did she hit a scissor kick goal too? For she was like wilding out there.
So people were calling it a BC. I would not call it a BC. It was like more of an overhead kick type goal. Okay, it was still great. It was an absolute golazo. But yeah, it was not a true BC, because it was like kind of stretching for it. Also, like, the way she landed, but I mean, it was an absolute goal also. And like, her, actually, if I'm PSG looking at this game, I'm like, honestly, we should have scored more. Like, Chewinga had a lot of chances to put away, and like, some of them were Ajax's goalkeeper coming up real big. And then some of them were just like probably a tiny bit wasteful. But yeah, they were absolutely eating that that Ajax back line. But then when Ajax got Romeo Leuchter, I believe that's how you say her last name, on the ball.
Yeah, she's real good.
She's a proper footballer. She's a serious footballer. Because
yeah, she's a problem.
Where she scored from, I was like, that's a great goal. I was like, first of all, and I know I don't like doing the jobs of, like, soon doing some of these NWSL jobs for them, but like, she would eat in the NWSL. She would absolutely eat. I think she would really thrive off of a more, like, once, like, what, because I, to be fair, I do think it takes players maybe a little bit of time to kind of adjust to the style of play of the NWSL. Not even just talking, like, not to bring up the transitional nature, but like, teams, like, I feel like at times also, like, really defending, like, sometimes just being like, yeah, we're just gonna, like, frustrate the living life out of you and, like, push you and kick you and defend the entire time. But I feel like once she adjusts to that, she would absolutely eat in this league, because she does really, really well, I think, also when, like, gaps of space open up, which oftentimes, I mean, we've seen happen in the NWSL. And so I really do think she would eat in this league. But yeah, I saw that goal and I was like, she's a proper footballer.
Yeah, it's funny. I know there's some beef sometimes that can pop up between Europe and the US. I mean, honestly, it feels a little one-sided, because, like, I watch a lot of European football. I enjoy it. I watch the NWSL. I enjoy it. So I don't feel a need to put anything down. Different styles, I find ways to enjoy them both. But I will say, there are sometimes some players in Europe where you're looking at them and you're like, you're an NWSL player, you just don't know it yet. I just really feel like there's a couple players out there where you're like, you would be right at home. And I, as much as it pains me to say, the number one player I feel that way about is Aaron Cuthbert. That is an NWSL player.
Aaron
and
Cuthbert
if she ever
is a grown
came,
woman.
She would be so much fun. But yeah, that's an NWSL player if I ever seen one.
Yes, 100%. I saw her scrapping in that midfield today. Aaron was scrapping. Melly was just mama-ing. Melly the mama was just mama-ing in that midfield. But yeah, Aaron Cuthbert is a... I put it right here in the rundown. I said, Aaron Cuthbert is a grown woman. But Andre, I know you didn't get to watch the game in real time because DAZN was having beef with you. But I know you've talked. You've watched a lot. Sorry?
It was a really bad joke.
I
try to say it low so it wouldn't interrupt you. My bad.
I think it's because you said it low. Like, my brain was like, there's something we missed. But Andre, talk me through Lily Johannes, because also the commentators kept calling her Lily Yanez. And I was like, I don't think that's how you pronounce her last name.
No, it is
not. I don't think that's how you do it.
It is not at all.
Because I will say the only time I do listen to commentators, which I know sounds like chaos, is if I have two games on at once and I'm clearly paying attention to one, I like need the audio of the other to like make me pay more attention. And since they were playing the same time as Chelsea and I forgot that Chelsea deeply stresses me out on days that end in Y, I was like, I need to listen to this game. And also by the time I was like more stressed out with Chelsea, it was also like it was still 3-1 to PSG. But talk me through Lily's game, because I feel like she's a player that maybe more people are trying to pick up on about right now. But like, talk me through her game.
Yeah. So me and Sylves, shout out to Shea Butter FC. Make sure you listen to their pod as well. Listen to both of them, Sky and Sylves. Me and Sylves are really, really adamant that like one of the things that we really want to see Emma Hayes do, one of the first things we need her to do is call Lily Johannes. Like, we need that to happen because she could be the answer. Now, she's really young. She's only 16. I believe she's still 16. I don't think she's 17 yet. So she's really young. And she is eligible to play for multiple nations. I believe the U.S. and Netherlands. So there is going to be some competition. Obviously, she's currently at Ajax right now. My thing with Lily is just like, she plays well beyond her years, and she fits in. She's in the Champions League holding her own. Now, obviously, this is not a great result, 3-1 to PSG. PSG are a very good side, but there have been times in the Champions League where she has really shown. She has an unnatural kind of passing range for her age, especially at this level. That's one thing I really like. She has really good vision. And when she sees a player have some separation, she's able to place the ball where they can run onto it, but doesn't hit it too long. You know, she has a good trajectory on the ball so that you can actually catch up to it and get a shot away or have a chance of controlling it and beating a defender. I believe she has a couple assists from pretty deep already in the Champions League from her own half where she sends the ball up into the attacking third. And she's also pretty sturdy. You know, she can hold up defensively as well. You know, I was looking at some of her numbers today. Shout out to Stats Bomb, but I was looking at some of the numbers today. I'll have a little bit more on her too, but like she can hold up defensively as well too. She does pretty good at recovery. She's pretty good with her tackles as well and her interceptions. So like there's still room, obviously room to grow. 16, you would expect that, but how comfortable she looks on the ball, her passing range and vision already. If she's cultivated, if she's brought into a system and grows, she's looking like a player that like of a profile that I don't know if we've really had, if we get her on the national team, that we've had in a while. Like she is really, really good and the potential is outrageous.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't had like an elite midfield passer in a long time.
Right. Like, and she's like, born like, in Springfield, Virginia, so Virginia stand up. So sure. So that's fun too. But like, yeah, I mean, apart from that, like, yeah, the surgical ability to pass from deep in midfield, you know, she's a true like number eight. She can sit deeper. She can go forward a little bit too. I think she tried to bike. She tried to respond to Katoto and try to bike as well. I don't know how, close it was. I just saw people tweeting about it, but yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm all here for her. She's got a ton of talent, and I really, really hope that phone starts to ring from the U.S. side soon, because if we end up losing her, I'm going to be real mad for, like I said, she's 16. I'm going to be mad for a couple decades.
That's very true, especially if the Netherlands pick her up and she wants to cook, which I'm like, oh. But yeah, I was like, thank you for educating the peoples. But yeah, for the other games today, and oh, well, sorry, before we move on to the other games, Andre, I have a question for you. So Group C is real tight. Oof. It's the tightest of tights. I think it's the tightest of tights it could ever be, because we are 5 match days in. And in Group C, we have PSG leading the way with 9 points. But then we have Ajax in second with 7th, Bayern in third with 6th, and Roma, sadly to us, in fourth with 5 points. Anyone can get out of this group. It is completely possible for anyone to get out of this group. It will, I can't lie, unfortunately, it will be difficult for a team like Roma, because they have to hope to beat Ajax and also hope that Bayern beat PSG. But also, truly, anything is possible. So my question to you, Andre, is who do you think is getting out of Group C?
Oh, that is a almost impossible question to answer because it's so tight. I was actually surprised with PSG That performance, like that's kind of an old school PSG performance, you know, when they're kind of perennially deep into the Champions League as well and looking to be like right on the heels of Lyon. I was like, okay, that's the kind of performance that reminded me of them, but I don't know if I can trust it. You know, I trust Katoto and she's going to help with her goal scoring, but I still think they lost a lot of pieces. You know, Diani is with Lyon now. You know, they lost quite a few pieces. And so I don't know. And as much as I appreciate them playing Corbin Albert as a number eight, I think they're really blocking their blessings by not having her closer to goal, because that could be another threat. And if you get Katoto cooking, then that space might open up that she loves to take shots from. And she's really good at scoring those. So, but, you know, I don't know, man. I'm like, I want Roma to go through just because I just love the story of Roma. I love that team. That team is super fun. I like that they were like debutantes, a season ago and made some noise. And I like to see Roma, you know, get there. I always kind of like when a new team pops up and says, like, nah, we're here to, like, stay. We're going to get past the group stages. We're going to make a little noise. So I love it. But I don't know. I'm probably going to choose the boring answer. It's probably going to end up being PSG and Bayern. And I don't like that. I don't like that I just said that.
Ooh, so you think Bayern's going to beat PSG?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Bayern's big problem is they don't have Magda. And I think that really showed. Like, they are unsettled in defense. And I don't know how, like, they'll probably be better by the time they play PSG. But I am, like, I still expect that team to be, like, they're quite talented. And I do think that they can beat PSG on their day. I don't know. But then again, looking at it, like, I was going to say, maybe that's a draw. But if that's a draw, then things get real funky, because then they got to say, I mean, Ajax picks up a single point, they'll be tied. Well, actually, no, if Ajax doesn't pick up a point, they'll be tied on points with Ajax. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I am going to get my wish and Ajax or Roma's going to go through.
Man. I mean, technically anything's possible.
It is. Why do you ask me this question? I'm mad at you.
Because we have the takes. I actually think PSG goes through. And it's only because these matches are back to back. And while PSG doesn't necessarily have a super tough game, their game this weekend is in the Coupe de France against Saint-Étienne. So it's not like they necessarily have like the toughest stretch. And they also, coming off this game, they beat Bordeaux 8-1 this past weekend. They were raining goals. Yeah. So I think PSG goes through. What I can't decide is if I think Ajax or Roma go through, because Roma got that
problem.
I was like, Ajax got that big win, that big 1-0 over Bayern.
Yeah.
But then Roma beat Ajax 3-0 the following match. And Roma has unfortunately been, like, their form has been tumbling a bit since since it restarted. Like, they lost, unfortunately, they went and they lost to Juve in the Women's Supercoppa. And then they
lost to Inter 2-0.
Yeah, I was like, and that was right after them in the Women's Coppa Italia in the first leg, losing to Napoli 2-0.
Yeah.
So they've kind of been tumbling a bit. And obviously, and then you have one of their players, Giacinti, who came out with an apparent concussion, even though it was weird. She got hit and then she got back up, started running around, and then she just like fell over. Non-contact, and so then everyone was super concerned, and they like brought out the stretcher, but then she walked off the field, and then she turned to the bench, and she was like, don't sub me, and she was like wagging her finger, and then they subbed her, obviously, and then she got pissed, and I was like, so maybe she's okay, I don't know, but I think basically this is my long way of saying, I think for Roma to get through, they're going to need a player like Evelyn Vienne to really get it back into that high flying form that she had at the start of the season. And obviously, you know, these players know that they need to win, but I don't know. Like, wanting joy for myself, Roma gets through.
See, and this is where I got stuck, and it was hard to answer the question and try to figure out what I thought, because I could actually see Ajax winning 3-0 or Roma winning 3-0 again. Like, I could really see it go either way, because neither one of these, like, Roma does not like when once you like Roma likes the underdog role right now, because that's kind of where they kind of perennially are. And I think that this was like, you know, tying 2-2 with Bayern is like, it is good, but I know they wanted the win, especially because they had the lead late. And so I could see them being like, okay, now's our chance. Like, we're going up against Ajax. We're going to do it. But I can also see Ajax being like, you know what? Like, we didn't expect to be in this position. All we got to do is go out there and beat Roma, who are in a poor run of form. We can do that, right? And so it's like, I could see either one of those happening, and I really don't know. But honestly, the bigger problem is, like, if PSG feels kind of comfortable and Bayern is in the mood, it won't really matter. Bayern beats PSG, then kind of happens unless Ajax beats Roma.
Well, yeah, I was like, Bayern beats PSG, then, like, it doesn't matter for Roma or Ajax. But, like, also in my brain, I'm like, does Bayern beat PSG with the form that PSG is currently in?
That's fair.
I'm going to argue more times, like right now, probably not. There's so many permutations and so many things that could happen, but I'm going to hang my hat on Roma because...
Ooh, Roma coming from the bottom of the table with, like, what, a game to go? I like it.
The thing is, it's so close. It is so close.
I like it.
If you can get Evelyn Levien back and just scoring a boatload of goals like she was for them at first, and Giacinti's actually healthy and she doesn't have a concussion, I think things could happen. I think it'll be a good time. Anyway, moving on to Group D. Chelsea beat Real Madrid 2-1 at the Bridge. All I have to say about this match is Erin Cuthbert is a grown woman. She's a serious footballer. I have a question for you, Andre. I have another question.
Okay.
What is going on with Chelsea's goalkeeper situation? Because we've seen a little bit of AKB, and then we've seen a little bit of Musovic, and now we're seeing a little bit of Hannah Hampton. Is Emma just toying with it? Is she unsure of who her number one is? What in the world is going on? Because every time I open up the team sheet, I'm like, anything is possible. And the thing is, you've also seen, like, it's, to me, like, outside of maybe AKB's experience as a keeper, like, it's kind of a coin, or a three-way coin toss somehow, between, like, who's actually going to get, like, be the number one starting keeper. Because they tried with Musovic. She is a bit error-prone. I don't know why Musovic can't translate to Swedish Musovic against just the U.S. Not against other teams, just the U.S. onto club form for Chelsea. And then AKB, probably not a hot take to say she's at the tail end of her career. But also, you know, AKB is going, like, something silly is going to happen, but she's also going to save two penalties. And it's like, do you take something silly is going to happen, but she's going to score two penalties? Or do you try with new player Hannah Hampton?
Yeah, so I think what's going on is you're seeing why Hannah Hampton did not go out on loan. I think Emma Hayes always thought that she's going to have to just figure out which of these goalkeepers is going to be the one to go with throughout the season. I ain't never really seen just rotating between three goalkeepers legitimately. Like, this was a big game. Chelsea did need, they didn't need to win this game, but winning it secures their exit out of the group stage. And thankfully they did that. And Hannah Hampton had had good performances as well. You know, at the weekend, she started a game. She, you know, had a good performance. She's very good with her distribution. And I think that's important, especially with, you know, Sam Kerr out, where you could, you know, Musovic or AKB could kind of just boot the ball forward and Sam Kerr will either win a header or whatever. But without her out, you probably need a little bit more precision from her passing and be able to spray it wide, you know, out to the fullbacks high up the pitch or someone else that sprays out wide. Like, you do need that direct threat from the goalkeeper, and Hampton is really good at it. So I think that's probably why she's starting, but she did make a bit of an error in this game to give Real Madrid their goal, and I think that's going to be a problem. Like, that's the kind of thing that if she can avoid, I think she's got that starting job, because I think Musovic, we've seen what she does. Sometimes she lets goals, her positioning can be weird. Sometimes her catching the ball can be weird. She's not exactly, 100% with her catches. And so it can, like, make things nervy for the back line. AKB can also have these weird moments, get caught in possession sometimes or kick the ball right to an attacker, like right at the top of the box. And you're like, please don't do that.
She's like, a cardiac calf. Does she play for the University of Virginia men's basketball team?
So, like, all three of them have an issue. And up until, I would say, today, we didn't really see Hampton exhibit the same kind of issue. But that was a ball that was shot low. Yeah, it was shot hard, but she had both her hands on it and should have been able to palm it down. But instead, it bounces away and a Real Madrid player is able to get to it. And it's basically an open goal. And that's the kind of stuff, like, if you could just not do that, that starting job would be yours.
Well, and that was the interesting part, because it's like, I wonder, I was like, were her gloves not sticky? Because
it didn't look like it.
Because I was like, she's doing all the right things. I just would expect her, like, and she got two hands to the ball. And so I'd expect her to like
yeah.
catch the ball.
Correct. Not that's what was
not
bad
for it to
it.
Go away. So that's why right. I was like, huh, that's really interesting. And then there was like another moment where she also like palmed it away where I thought, oh, I thought you could have like caught that something. So I was like, maybe her gloves aren't sticky. Also, to be fair, I don't know that much about goalkeeping. I'll be honest. I don't know that much about goalkeeping.
I'm just sad because it feels like if she would be it, especially with Sam Corral. Like she would be the solution, but you can't have those mistakes. I don't think it's one of those where you don't start her again, like you sit on the bench for a few games. I would like to see her start again, if only to recover, see how she recovers from that kind of mistake. But if she makes it again, or if she's uncertain again with her catches or getting low and not spilling the ball, then I think you got to be like, all right, back to rotation. Who's up next? Maybe we go back to AKB and see what happens. Maybe once that goes, you go back to Musovic. I don't know, but it's not a great feeling being in January and not really have an idea who your starting goalkeeper really is.
Yeah, I think that's like that's almost the surprising part to me. It's just that like a choice hasn't been made, but also at the same time, she is 23. She's super young. You know, maybe it's the type of thing where, like, you know, she just has to, well, to be honest, she's not, like, super young, but, like, in terms of goalkeepers, like, I know we were just talking about Kiara Keating, who's, like, 17, which is, like, extremely young for a keeper to get a starting spot. But, you know, like, technically she is young, and, like, maybe it's the type of thing where she just kind of has to work it out of her system. Or it's just, you know, like, maybe the watering is different. At Stamford Bridge. I don't know.
I like your suggestion is maybe she just needs new gloves. Maybe that's it.
I was just like, so, like I can't lie. I've never had a thought in my head previous to today being like, are the goalkeeper's gloves sticky enough? Like, were her gloves sticky? But yeah, that is like a question mark going forward for Chelsea of like, besides the fact of who's going to play at the nine, Emma keeps rotating. I don't know. Does she know? I mean, she probably has some cooked up, but like, I don't know. But also to me, it's like the more concerning thing is who's going to be the goalkeeper. Cause I was like, you can put me official there and try to get her to work it out. Cause I know she got subbed at halftime and maybe you should have a long conversation about how she's adjusting to Chelsea, where I feel like she came in with a bright start. Obviously Sam Kerr comes back and, you know, maybe it was the type of thing for Emma saw her in a more like, secondary role to Sam, which I don't think is a hot take. I think if you have Sam Kerr on your team, you're gonna play her, and it's like her. But I don't think she necessarily had the best 45 minutes, and so now I also feel like part of it is too that I don't know. I'm just like curious of how she's adjusting. We did know that she had Did she have a hip or a groin injury? Right?
Yeah, I think it was a groin injury.
Yeah, so it's like maybe that's why she also like I don't know what it's like to have a groin injury. I do know what it's like to have a knee injury though. And, like, so any type of injury, maybe you're not moving as well. But also know that Chelsea is apparently about to break another record transfer fee for Myra Ramirez of Colombia, which I need. First of all, there's, like, 17 different places I need to move. Like, I need to move to England so I can watch this Chelsea team up close every day. But also so I can see more English women's football. But also I, like, now have a long list of places I need to go in the NWSL. I don't know how I'm going to finance all this. So that's going to be fun. But yeah, just with, yeah, sorry, I'm just, my brain is still just, besides ADHDing, is also thinking a little bit about Mia Fischel and just how she's adjusting with the Chelsea side. Cause it's like, I do think she, when she's in and like is asked to play as a nine, it works really well. It allows Lauren James to like, you know, do all the great Lauren James things that she's allowed to do. And Mia can, you know, besides dropping into midfield and having really good hold-up play and being able to, you know, distribute the ball and occupy center backs and all of those things, it hasn't, like today is a day, for example, where she didn't have that many chance-creating opportunities. But also on the flip side, I'm like, we've seen Mia Fischel score a boatload of goals for Tigres. I don't know why I say it like that. Tigres. But also I think Mia Fischel can hit Sam Kerr heights in her career. I don't think that's a hot take. I think she has the sky is the limit for her. So I also think like all the way back to when Sam Kerr was missing a ridiculous amount of chances when she first joined Chelsea and people were not here for her. And we're like, just wait. She needs like, maybe her shoes are EU sizes instead of instead of U.S. sizes or something. Like, she just needs to get her proper shooting boots on. And then obviously we've seen what has happened in the years since. And so another question for you. I guess I'm just asking you a lot of questions today. Do you think that is the reason why maybe Mia Fischel isn't doing so, like, well so far this season? Or is it that, you know, this was also a huge occasion, like a semi must win game? Is it that maybe she just, like, you know, or sorry, are we rushing to our opinions, or do we need, like, more data of, like, how she plays against a Bristol City?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I am not at all concerned about Mia Fischel. I think she's doing all right. I like what I see when she gets into games in terms of her movement. I'll say this, though. Like, the big thing for me with Mia Fischel is kind of like with every new player that comes to Chelsea, Emma Hayes kind of puts them in different situations. This is what she likes to do. You know, so Lauren James got there and Lauren James didn't start for a while. And
all the things Emma probably asks for them on a regular basis when they come in.
Right. Yeah. They're like, it's a lot. You have to do a ton in terms of, like, from pressing to counter pressing, you know, cover shadowing, all of that stuff, out of possession, then all the in possession stuff. Like, it is difficult to pick up on everything. And she usually has them take some time. So in addition to Lauren James and her injuries, she had to take some time, you know, to recover. But then she wasn't just thrown in to start right away. You know, we've seen the only player that really comes in, you know, after missing significant amount of time and gets right back into it is like Fran Kirby. And that's it. And she's been with Emma Hayes for a long time. But Shoka Nuskin, think about her. When's the last time she started a game? I think it was the Arsenal game, maybe, which was what, in early December? I'm trying to scroll back and see, double check on that. But, you know, she came, she scored a hat trick. It was kind of cool to see. And then all of a sudden, Emma was like, all right, that's cool. I see what you can do in these situations. And now we're going to have you on the bench for a little bit. And so I think that's what she would naturally want to do. But Sam Kerr's injury really changed things, obviously. And mm-hmm. so now she has to rely on a player who isn't as familiar with, because before Sam Kerr was injured, you weren't going to start Mia Fischel over Sam Kerr. That would have been silly. Like, as much as I love Mia Fischel, that's not what she's there for right now.
Unless it's like a Conti Cup game or something, you know, where, like, it's natural rotation.
Right. And so that's not what's happening. And so now she's having to start games, and she was never really expected to be in this position so soon in her Chelsea career. I don't think that's a problem. So it's going to, to me, though, it is going to be interesting to see in terms of the rest of the season, who gets more minutes? Ramirez, who you talked about is coming from Colombia, which I'm actually real hype about, or Mia Fischel. I think you'll see a combination of the two, depending. But I also, like, I'm not worried. I think Mia Fischel is kind of like on schedule in terms of Emma Hayes. And we'll see what happens the rest of the season. And obviously, once Emma Hayes is gone, it'll be interesting to see what the new manager, whoever that is going to think and going to do with Mia Fischel. But I think she's shown enough. She's shown what she can do in the team. It's just a matter of learning all of those nuances to where it's like second nature. And she's just out there vibing with the team as they do, because that's ideally how you want to integrate a new player. And, like, even Ashley Lawrence took a while to start a bunch of games, right? So, mm-hmm. like, to me, it's just Emma Hayes is what she does. I'm not really nervous about it. I'm not really thinking anything's wrong with Mia Fischel. I just think it's going to take some time, and that's fine. It's just unfortunate that Sam Kerr got the worst injuries you can get, and one of the worst injuries you can get, and she's going to miss the rest of the season. So,
yeah, that's true. I do think there is also now added pressure on her, where before it was like coming in, trying to learn, try to be basically becoming the best footballer. Of, like, I mean, Emma has said a few times, besides the fact calling this game boring, which is hilarious, I cannot wait for her press conferences for the U.S. Women's National Team. Oh. Between this and the geese, like, or remember, I mean, they use it in the promos when we signed Kat.
Yeah.
She was purring, and I was like, she's going to be a hoot. I'm so excited for this to happen.
As soon as they give me a Zoom link, I'm going to sit there. I don't care if it's days away. Zoom link. I want to be there.
That Kylian Mbappe quote, yes. I will be there no matter what. That is the two of us.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to her. She's so ridiculous.
Yeah. But also I want to say, my daughter Ramirez is a Colombian player. She's coming from Levante, by the way. She's coming out of Spain because that club is a whole mess on its own. But yeah, also, even though I do want to see start Aggie Beaver Jones, give me some Aggie time.
I am her stan.
I am her biggest stan. And look, I've never been shy about my Chelsea opinions here and how they either give me a lot of joy or abject or just like ruin my life, mostly on the men's side. But like Aggie Beaver-Jones, I remember seeing her technically like her Chelsea senior debut this past year. Or I don't know if it was her senior debut, but like her first Chelsea appearance of this season. And she actually in that 2-2, that like wild game against Roma, which was really fun. The Courtney Sith and Andre Carlisle derby. And she nutmegged someone with her second touch. And I said, I stan right here. And so she's just, I just want to see, like, I want to see her get more playing time because I do think she has been maybe, well, actually she was on loan, but I just think like if Emma's still tinkering and trying to figure out, you know, who she wants the number nine to be, like at this point, why not? At this point, why not go to a 3-5-2? All I'm saying is maybe it happened.
Don't give that defense any more things to deal with. They ain't settled yet. Let's keep them.
I know, but I also kind of want to see a Mia Fischel.
At least till Millie gets back.
Fair, but I also kind of want to see a Mia Fischel. Okay. I don't want to float the idea of a 4-4-2, but I do want to see like a Mia Fischel. I know.
We could do 4-4-2. It'd be fine.
Yeah, but you know how I feel about Lauren James just like being allowed to float. But yeah. Also having a Ashley Lawrence as a wingback and Neve as a wingback. Anyway, sorry. You're just welcoming my brain. But I do want to see like Mia Fischel and Myra Ramirez in a strike partnership. I think that would be real fun.
If that happens against a single team, I can tell you that their defense, including that their center back pairing, is not going to want to ever see that again. They're just going to get ragdolled all over the pitch because those like, two are strong as hell.
They're strong as hell. They can find way. They can be clever in the ways that they stretch defenses. They both have like Mayra Ramirez has really, really good hold up play, but also can hit a ball from distance, as we saw in the World Cup. Like the two of them could be really fun.
Yeah.
So I was thinking
a bad day for center backs having to deal with both of those players at the same time.
I'd be like, are you kidding? So that's why I was like, maybe a 3-5-2 if we could do a little wing back situation or just a 4-4-2. But then I was like, I don't know, I was like, Emma might do some weird with Lauren James in a 4-4-2 too. So like a 4-4-2 T-O-O is what I was saying, not 4-4-2. I'm not adding two extra players. But I was just like, I think the two of them as a strike partnership could just be really fun. And that's something I really want to see. Unless Emma wants to bring back the 4-2-2-2-2.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no on that because I think the times that we tried it, I just don't know if it's like we needed more time on the training pitch with it, but it was not good.
We definitely did, but I'm thinking about all the formations where we could have the two of them as a strike partnership.
Yeah, it's just for me, it's just we never figured out the width when we were in that, and that was the problem. But yeah,
but we have Ashley Lawrence now.
We do.
Neve Charles.
It's true.
Anything's possible.
That is anyway. Funny. We say Neve Charles that way, which like listen.
Look, we weren't feeling this way a year. We weren't feeling this way a year ago.
That is a gift. Emma, I I don't know how you saw it.
Emma said, let me cook.
I'm glad that you saw it, but I did not see it. I see it now, but I did not see it.
I did not. But sorry, quickly moving us on. Hacken versus PSG, Chamakhna Dozie, brick wall.
Oh, my God.
Brick wall. Again. I tweeted it. She's the best goalkeeper of this group stage. If you disagree, go argue with your mama. Like,
agreed.
Like, she has been absolutely fantastic. And look, I know the PK she saved, the actual PK wasn't great, but she has been the reason why Paris FC is not at the bottom of that group. She is so important.
I just have to say, I'm just going
to
call a timeout real quick because I've seen that said, and not a knock to you because I will agree, it wasn't the best penalty. But I'm going to say,
it's still hard to do, though.
Correct. I was also going to say, it ain't like she saved one. She does this. Like, she has a history of saving these penalties. And so, like, yes, not everybody is taking bad shots against her. Sometimes it just happens. But she also makes players either think twice about it because they know who they're going up against or try to be too precise. And to me, that's also a credit to her because she has done this so often. And it is no joke. the hardest thing for a goalkeeper to do. So why penalties have such a massive XG number, because it is extremely hard to stop penalties and even harder to stop them consistently. Somehow she's doing it.
Andre, actually, I'll save my stat because I do have a stat for you.
Let's hear it, though.
I need to contextualize the stat first. So a lot of people were like, Hacking is cooking, which they were. Their actual patterns of play were beautiful. Like, some of their passing patterns, I was like, they're cooking. They're flambéing. Well, I didn't think they were flambéing, but I was like, they're in the kitchen against this French side. They're doing French cuisine. I thought they were cooking. However, and despite Ndozie being fantastic, I also don't think that they troubled her that much. I feel like she came out to the edge of her box a lot. She was very quick off her line. Like outside of the penalty, I think she maybe made one or two other big saves.
She made one really late that was wild.
Yeah, I know exactly one you're talking about. But like outside of that penalty save and that one, it wasn't like they were like battering Paris FC's net and like forcing her into like a lot of saves. Like watching that game, it was like, she was like really off her line a lot. And because that reason was getting battered by them Hacking players. Like she got like, I think she got her ear stepped on. Like she was getting absolutely battered by them, but not by their shots. It's because they kept running into her because she was quick off her line. And so this is my stat for you. Paris FC's XG this game was 1.22. So a little bit more than technically a goal. But Andre, do you know what the XG is for a penalty?
Isn't it like 0.8?
It's 0.79.
Okay. So I rounded up.
You did. But if I do my calculations properly, without that penalty, Hacking's XG was only 0.43. If you take away that from that penalty, it was only 0.43, which is why I think while they were having beautiful patterns of play, and I saw, to be fair, some absolute gorgeous passes, they weren't actually shooting that much. They weren't creating a lot of like really high quality chances where it's like, oh, they should be 2-3-0 up. Where on the flip side, Paris FC's, their XG was 1.92, if I'm remembering correctly. And there were I was watching that game and I was like, how have you not scored 4 goals? Like Clara Mateo had like an open chance that I don't really know how she missed. Like they missed. They had really big chances where they were ended up being pretty wasteful in front of goal. Yes, Hacking's keeper had one or two really massive saves, but I was like, you should be, to me, Paris FC should have 100% won this game, which I know is a hot take, because a lot of people were saying that Hacking very much should have won this game, but I was like, but they weren't actually creating that much in front of goal. If you take away the XG of that penalty, the rest of their, it wasn't like they had won the XG battle, like, 2.5 or, like, 2.7 to, you know, Paris FC, it's like 0.9 or something. And it was an even match, but I was like, I really think that Paris FC should have went away with the 3 points.
Yeah, I saw a few of Paris FC's closer chances, and I was a little disappointed that they didn't put them away because it seemed like they were able to get the ball. I think the biggest difference to me in like watching that game was that when Hacking got the ball beyond Paris FC's line and into the box, they just didn't have the right, like that the final pass wasn't good. So, and part of that was Ndozie coming up and coming off her line early and getting to the ball. So they had to be super precise and they weren't able to. Whereas Paris FC, when they would attack, they would get the ball to the feet of their players. Their players just were taking poor shots and not getting the ball in the back of the net. So to me, that's what it kind of felt like. Like both teams, in terms of buildup, did some good things, but that final ball wasn't really getting to the attacker's foot for Hacking, and for Paris FC it was, but they were a little wasteful with their chances.
And for those reasons, Paris FC should have won. You summed it up
conclusion.
Really well. In conclusion, yes. But yeah, that's how I feel. And I honestly, I don't know who gets out of this group, because Paris FC has to beat Chelsea, and I think Hacking beats Real Madrid. So maybe it's Hacking gets out of the group.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Real Madrid did, like, they've been out. So they were out before this Chelsea game. And I feel like
they were out and on match day 4.
Yeah. So I feel like they put up their, like, biggest effort against Chelsea. And they probably won't have nothing for her. Probably won't have nothing in their next match. We'll see how they do. But I could see them being like, all right, well.
Yeah. To me, it depends if Linda Caicedo ends up being healthy or not.
Yeah,
she picked up a small knock, and the coach was very much like, this is a throwaway game. We're not we're not going to like take a chance of have her running around and potentially injuring herself more. So I don't know. Maybe they try to play spoiler. Maybe they don't. We'll say Haley Raso. She gives, she takes, gives up a penalty, but then creates, has that strike that turns into their equalizer. And I would actually really love to see how Häkkinen deals with her. But I also feel like with Real Madrid, they're missing Caroline Weir, which is a huge, huge player to miss in their midfield. But Andre, are you ready to talk? The NWSL preseason has begun for some, but we're basically in NWSL preseason season. You want to talk about that?
Let's do it.
All right, so the preseason is preseasoning. The oven's preheating. Andre, how are you feeling about NWSL preseason? We just learned, finally, that the Washington Spirit do have an interim coach.
They
that
do.
That is, in fact, happening. And we're going to get a schedule tomorrow?
We are, finally.
Or when you're listening to this today, we're getting a schedule later today. Can't believe that. It's happening before February. People can make plans.
That it is a full 5 days earlier than last year. So we're getting there.
Only five?
I think it's only five. So by like 2030, we might have one before the end of the year.
I was like, where are you going with this? Maybe.
But yeah, so I feel like some teams are fun, have done a lot of fun things, and I'm excited to see how they kind of manifest on the pitch. I think there's a lot of interesting and fun coaches now in the league, so I appreciate the teams are putting that kind of stuff together and focusing more on like styles of play, different coaches implementing different styles and seeing the style variety and the different player profiles that you need and going and getting those. So I'm excited about that. I think some teams still have some question marks, like the Spirit. I would like them to have more players going to camp than are going to camp. I believe there are 26, but 25 because one of those players is injured. She's a draftee who tore ACL in November, so not expecting her to be a participant at all in preseason or maybe even throughout the year, depending on her recovery. So, that's not enough. I still think that they need a player or two. And they have international spots. They should have enough salary cap money because Sanchez and Staub were bigger salaries. I have talked about on other podcasts how I feel about the moves that the Spirit have made. But I think just looking ahead, given the squad they have, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a fan of any team. Obviously, trading players without their knowledge. I don't think that's a smart thing. I don't think it's a good look for the league. It should be something that it should not be possible. I'm hoping that the league can come out with some sort of rule without having to wait for the next collective bargaining agreement to make sure that this doesn't happen. Because we have seen multiple players post their farewell messages saying that they were shocked. Asley Sanchez did that. Alex Lorera did that as well. There are plenty of other players. Nichelle Prince did Casey as well.
CeCe Kaiser
was a big one. I mean, KC has a bunch of these, and this is their second offseason with another one of these, or multiple. So, like, I don't love that. That has to stop. It is a really bad look for the league. I don't know. I mean, I love Croy Bethune. I think that people are going to be very surprised at what she can do already. Her vision, like she is a natural 10. With Ashley Sanchez, I love her, but they were trying to turn her into a 10. And I don't know if, one, they didn't do her any favors with all the coaching changes. So that was also a problem. I think with Neha, she will be, if she embraces that challenge and actually is okay with being there, which is completely up to her because she gets to have obviously a say and feel on how her career has gone and what she wants to do, given that she had a brutal summer as well. But I do think that Croy Bethune is going to surprise a lot of people. I think she is an excellent player. She can stay healthy. She is going to me, be right up there in the running for rookie of the year. And I think you're probably going to see some things from her that you haven't seen from a rookie in a couple seasons. So especially in midfield. So I'm really excited to have her on the team. In terms of defense, I have no idea what they're doing. I don't see a natural replacement for Sam Staub. I also think there needs to be another number eight that can kind of help implement more of a passing style game that's sharper with their passes, that's a more experienced player in the center of the pitch. Because right now, I don't think that player exists on the Spirit. And it's going to be really hard to take a team, the bones of a team that was not, looking at the stats, they had like some of the worst pass completion, the worst like successful passes, the least successful passes as well in the league. And I don't see how you're going to take that team and suddenly turn them into a beautiful possession style team without making at least one or two more changes to personnel, so, or additions to the personnel. So I'm going to be very interested to see what the Spirit squad looks like as we get closer to the start of the season.
That's very true. You laid out a lot of important points. I just want to know when they'll get two real center backs and free Tara McKeown from the center back
show. I don't think Tara's ever going to get free as long as she's with the Spirit. She's listed as a defender already.
I know. I tweeted about it.
Yeah, so that's bad news. I almost kind of feel like I think she probably won't start as many games as she did. I kind of feel like Battelle, who they brought in from France last I believe August is when she came in. And correct. And I think Casey Krueger could end up being a center back. It's a possibility. So we'll see.
I mean, she can play anywhere across the back line.
She can. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. That doesn't surprise me. Actually, one of the new hires that I work with, who was a Florida State soccer player, said Florida State was famous for like basically getting all forwards into their class and then converting half of them to center backs, which I was like, well, there's Mark Kay.
That guy.
But yeah, there also, I mean, there's been a lot of trades recently. Sam Hyatt has now joined Gotham.
That's wild.
Baffling. I mean, Gotham needed like a center back. I just was not expecting Sam Hyatt. I thought, as like a Washington native, I thought she was, you know, super happy it rained. So I don't know. But obviously that's a great get. What else has happened? Simone Charlie signed for Orlando. Wow. Orlando's cooking.
I love that.
I said before they were like quietly cooking, like maybe a simmer. Yeah. Now I think they're just like starting to flambe, like, hibachi style, where set the onion tower on fire. That's what Orlando's doing. Besides converting Orlando four players that were previously occupied international spots, now all those players have their green cards, which means they don't occupy international spots. Look, they said work smarter, not harder.
That's the type of shit I'm talking about.
Give it up to Orlando's front office. They have been cooking. King.
He said, give me the best immigration lawyer we can find. Like let's make this happen. I think that is so smart. Obviously, they're signing a bunch of Brazilians, but yeah, if you can get players with green cards and they don't count against the international cap, make it happen. And I bet you, Casey Stoney probably over there in San Diego, like, yo, what the hell? Because it took her for, she went through hell getting her family over here. and Orlando's like, here you go, we good.
That's absolutely, I just think they've been cooking this offseason. I think just all the moves they've made have been really, really smart, like getting in a player, even though it's like baffling to like look at them because I'm like, huh? But like getting in a player like Morgan Cattrall into that midfield to steady things, like playing alongside Marta, like I just think. And then, you know, obviously you have Messiah Bright coming back, getting in a player like Simone Charlie. Like, you can go down the list of players they've had, and I just think it's all absolutely brilliant. I think it's so smart. So, yeah, Orlando has just been cooking this past offseason, and they only missed out on the playoffs last season by goal differential. Like, literally just by goal differential.
Yep.
So, I just think they've been doing absolutely fantastic, and, yeah, they're the hibachi tower is on the hibachi onion tower is currently on fire, and it's just Haley adding oil to it, and it's just continue going up in flame. I think they've been cooking, and getting a player like Simone Charlie is brilliant. Rumors of Jesse Fleming going to Portland.
Oh yeah, kinda I kind of like that move.
I like the move. I think bringing in a player like Newskin was all of a sudden like, oh.
Yeah, Nuskin and also Leupolz being back and fit and able to start games now, that's it's a tough midfield to get into right now. So
yeah, well, and Aaron Cuthbert being a grown-ass woman.
Correct.
So yeah, like, so sad about that from a Chelsea side, but I think of her, I think she's going to do really, really well in Portland, especially now that Rocky Rodriguez has now gone to Angel City.
Yeah.
I think it's, again, smart moves. There are a lot of smart moves across the board, I think.
Yo, Angel City really needed Rocky Rodriguez, and so that is a really good fit.
That is a really good fit. I think she's going to cook. She is. She's going to cook because she's been cooking. G, our fave G is now, I have to go to Seattle.
Yes.
I needed to go anyway because I really wanted a gluten-free pumpkin cookie and pumpkin pancakes. Besides the point, those are my priorities. If you're gluten-free, you know. If when you get something really good that's gluten-free and you think about it all the time, you know. So I really want to go back to Seattle. Also, I have a friend who just moved back there. So now I really want to go back to Seattle. And now G, if people don't know, G is such a baller. She played for Chelsea for over a decade or just under, either a decade or a little bit more. And then she left last season, two seasons ago. I think it has been two seasons. But yeah, she's absolutely fantastic. U.S. fans, if you remember when the U.S. played South Korea and Tierna Davidson got nutmegged on national television, G did that.
It was, you gotta bring up old stuff.
Because she, look, and I'm gonna be watching Tierna up close, but she cooked her, and so this is getting G is such a good get, like that, especially with a Seattle team where we were like, they keep losing players, like what's going on, like that is a huge big name get, and so I'm deeply excited to be able to watch her and then hopefully get out to Seattle to watch her in person. And Andre, our last thing about this NWSL preseason beginning, besides a little tussle online between, it's not an actual tussle, it was just a petty tweet, between Utah and the Bay, Bay FC has released one of their kits. I don't know if it's their home kit. I would hope not, given that the NWSL is, I believe, is still making people have like light-colored kits for away days. But their kit was a little disappointing. It did not spark joy.
Yeah, just a little bit.
To me, it looked like when you wrote really hard on a piece of paper and pencil and then tried to erase it, and then like there was a little smudge. You didn't have a good eraser. Unfortunately, my Queens of Bay, that's kind of... It was not the best. We've both heard that there have been production issues potentially with some of these jerseys. And just jerseys teams are still waiting for kits and things like that. But I don't know. For me, I feel like you always want to, and this happened 2 years ago with San Diego. Remember, like with your first kit, you always really want to hit it out of the park. Like you really want to do that. And I can't lie, this kit doesn't do it for me. I think there are a lot of cool things they could have done if they were trying to like lean into the fog aspect of it. But that, can't lie, it's not doing it for me.
Yeah, no. It's not good. And I'm actually really sad because they didn't even have to put in a lot of design, like in terms of like design elements into it, to like, sometimes it's difficult to take, like, cause you want to put fun design elements, but then they have to be cohesive and you have to get all the parts right to make the kit cohesive and nice. And so it's not easy, but given that, you know, that crest that they have, that badge, it's like that old school B. I still think it looks more like a baseball team than a soccer team, but honestly, they came out with like a shield that for their inaugural season, and it looks dope. Make that the whole thing. Just put like Bay FC at the top instead of inaugural season. Then you have a really classic shield. And I also think that because it is so classic and it has that look and it has that like deep navy blue and white vibe, you go super classic. All you just really need to do is have something that's got like the right ribbing, the right piping around it or something, you know, maybe make that the whole thing is navy blue. And then you got the white piping or something, like just do something. You can do it really subtly with some of these hints. And I just don't understand not leaning into like the classic nature of everything they have going there. It could have been a really cool, it didn't have to be complex, but it could have been a really cool, a really classic, good looking shirt. And instead they went with like a weak design, like design element. It's half faded on the on it, and so like it's gray, which just makes the shirt look dirty. And then like that's it. I'm just like, I don't understand. And then they're all hyping it up. Our legendary kit. Ain't nothing legendary about that. Nothing. Stop playing. Stop lying to me. Just because you can write the word on the screen or next to it doesn't mean it's going to make it true. It's just like really frustrating. And then, of course, Utah jumped in, which I appreciate the banter. It was important. They said our kit launch is still about a month away, but we promise it's better than theirs. And so I love that, except if it's got America First on it, it actually won't be better because fuck that shit.
I can't lie. I'm also like, that means you got to hit it out of the park.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, like, it is a month away, so maybe people will forget that they came out swinging, and they'll just remember the shot against Bay FC. But yeah, if it's trash, I'm definitely pulling this sweep back up.
I have a question about this inaugural season logo. Well, I have two. Does that mean they're going to change it next year if they have one specific for the inaugural season?
Well, that's the thing. I don't even think they're going to use this very often. I just think they're using it on like printed materials because the badge and the shirt is just the circular B. They're not actually using that, and they should because it looks good.
Yeah, that's – I can't lie. I was a bit confused about that. And maybe – I mean, look, maybe it's another production issue. I do think – I can't lie. The I don't know how to describe it, but they basically have like the logo with a B, and then it says like Bay FC around it. It almost looks – like baseball-y. Like it really does look purely baseball-y, but I'm like, honestly, like you can put that on a kit. I think that's kind of nice.
Yeah. And you can rock that. Think about like the Dodgers font or something. You just, not that you want to copy that, because obviously that's Southern California. You don't really want to like Southern and North, and like, you don't want to do that. But they could do something real classic with like a script Bay FC on the front or whatever. Like there's a lot you could do with that logo, that badge, even though I don't think it's like the best. It's classic, it's versatile, it can work if you work with it, and they just aren't working with it.
That is very true. When you said the North versus the South, an absolutely wild thought came in my head, and I started laughing to myself, and I said, we're not repeating this. But yeah, I completely agree. So yeah, I don't know. It will 100% depend. But Andre, it's time for Heated and Hyped. Are you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, what, you go first. What's your heated?
Oh, I gotta go first.
I mean, I can go first, but mine, it's not like something that anyone can relate to. I'm just heated at my calf.
Since you threw it out there, go ahead.
It's just stubborn and it hurts, and it's pulling where it hurts on my calf is pulling very directly where it feels like I'm like, have retorn my meniscus where I tore it, which stresses me out 24/7. And so I'm just heated at my calf because why are you like this? And yesterday my PT rubbed it out and I was like, oh, I feel so much relief. And then I woke up the next morning and it was bruised and sore. And I said, stop being like this. So yeah, I'm just heated at my calf. I'm like, literally I'm just heated at my calf muscle. Cause I'm like, you don't need to be like this. You've never given me trouble once before in my entire life. Why are you trying to act different? Why are you trying to act brand new in 2024? So that's my heated.
Okay.
It's like me finding the moon part two.
I'm sorry for that. My heated is going to be that net transfer threshold that the competition rules, the committee.
Wait,
or whatever.
Can you explain that to me? I try to read about it and I swear it's words on a page and my brain doesn't comprehend.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to do my best to explain this because I was actually, you know, talking to some folks about it, and I kind of understand why they did it, but I also think that it's still whack. So basically for every window, off-season window, I guess it doesn't have to be off-season, but whenever you can transfer players in, there's a cap on the transfer fee that NWSL teams can pay, and it's a net $500,000. So if you pay $500,000 for one player, then okay, good. If you combine it and suddenly you're at $600,000, then whatever you're over $500,000, you take 25% of that. And that goes, it's kind of like a luxury tax situation, except there's some confusion for me because it actually says that it counts against the salary cap, but I've also heard that might not be true. But if it is, then that lowers the team's cap number, and that's concerning. So that's kind of what it is. Now there is a way to offset it, but you have to sell players. Like whatever you get in as a transfer fee also kind of helps balance that. But that means also that you're losing talent, you're losing players. So the reason why I'm really mad at it is, one, I think it's a broke boy rule that you don't really need right now. There's a lot of teams that are paying expansion fees to come in between 2022 and 2026. I think you're going to get, what, six new transfer expansion fees are coming in, which I think is a lot of money if we're seeing how much expansion teams are going for. We've seen that with both Angel City, San Diego. We're seeing it with Bay FC as well, Utah as well. I think the other problem that I have with it, though, is that this is an attempt to control a market that you don't control. Right? Like, other teams are going to raise this market. We know the market for women's players has been artificially suppressed. And now we're finally starting to figure out what the actual market is. So every single window, you hear either a rumor of or a transaction goes through that pushes that number higher. So the market is continuing to expand because it's nowhere close to being what it actually is. So you're going to see it continue to go up and up and up. And so I mentioned this because apparently from Mayra Ramirez to Chelsea, they're paying her release clause, which is 400,000 euro. If you do the whatever the, I don't remember exactly what the conversion rate is, but that's 435,000. If an NWSL team were to do that without selling any players or bringing in another transfer fee, they'd be super close already to that, and they would not be able to bring in another player that was, say, you know, 80,000, 100,000 or whatever. They wouldn't be able to pay that transfer fee without going into that quote-unquote luxury tax or whatever and being at risk of paying that 25% overage on the overage unless they also sold players. So my question is, do we want the most talented players in this league or not? Right. So, like, yeah, if we got owners that are spending money to develop training facilities, if we got owners to spending money to, you know, create stadiums, all the staff, which I think is super important to build up the infrastructure of a team, but spend that money on players too. And I understand it's not really an American thing to pay a transfer fee. We're not used to that. Doesn't matter. We're in a global market. That's the way it's done. We're not going to change that. And so to me, that and the number already looks small. And I knew this was going to happen. You let one transfer go through, which happens to be the very next window after this was implemented. I just think this came out in December. Now it's January. Now Chelsea's already 400K for Mayra Ramirez, which is the same that Barcelona, when they broke the record, was for Kira Walsh. So the record's going to keep going up and up. Very soon, I believe, maybe this summer, if not this summer, certainly next summer, we're going to see the first £1 million transfer or $1 million transfer in the women's game. And I just think that, like, you're really hamstringing teams by putting this rule in, but also having setting it so low as 500K just seems ridiculous to me because, again, do we want to compete for the best talent or not? So that's what I'm heated about.
Rightfully so. Our heated really span the gamut this week. yeah, that is a really baffling rule to me. I like tried reading about it, and I was a bit confused. But yeah, that don't love.
I've seen some people say that I'm like overreacting to it too. So like, I do want to present the other side where people are like, it's just the overage, it's just 25%. But honestly, I need to understand.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So let's say they pay 500. Wait. Let's say they pay $800,000 on a transfer. So they would have to pay the league 25% of that, so $200,000, or like
25% of whatever the overage is. So $300,000 in this example is 300K would be over the 500, and so it's 25% of the 300K. But the question mark to me is it paying the league like a luxury tax, or is it actually being deducted from your salary cap? Because the way the rule is written on the league's website. Which actually, give me a second, because I'll actually read what it actually says. And that's what got me like, whoa, I don't like this. It says a team will incur a 25% charge towards that team's salary cap. If it's a salary cap, that's brutal. That's brutal. I hope it's not that.
So, sorry, I did 800,000 because I was trying to do easy math. So since the cap's at 500,000, right? So let's say they pay 600,000 for a transfer. They would have to pay 25K.
Yeah, if you don't bring in incoming, you know, any if you don't sell any players and you don't get any incoming cash as like a transfer fee, then mm-hmm. Yeah, 25K would be the 25% of 100, and that the way it's written right now, the way I read it is would be deducted against your overall salary cap number. So basically you would lose 25K from your salary cap that season.
Oh. Why? I guess that's my question. Like, why? Like, I don't know what the I don't know what the purpose of that is outside of maybe trying to get teams to spend more like fruitfully. But also, I'm like, if you want to be the top league in the world, you need to have the best players in the world.
Right.
And so if someone wants to sign Aitana Bonmatí for $1 million,
let them.
Like, if they can pay for it. And their club won't go into administration. I think there should be, instead of doing like that type of rule, I would do a rule about like not necessarily like an FFP type rule, but or like almost like an FFP type rule. We're not saying that you have to like sell $1 million worth of players, but that you need to make sure that your books are in order so your club does not go under from spending that. Now, could that be of, hey, I'm worth 89 or like I'm worth $100 million, like this is, you know, 1% and all, and because of all these other things and our ticket sales or whatever, like is there a way to do that? Yeah, but like, and so making it because of we know what happens and what has happened in like also previous leagues of teams going bankrupt, like if there's a way, a smart way to allow teams to spend without making their team go bankrupt, there's a way to do that. But yeah, That entire rule is crazy.
And my whole thing is, like, to me, the number's too low and it's too soon for this type of rule. I understand, like, the transfer market for men's players, especially in Europe, is out of control. Like, an MLS team, a team outside of Europe, has no chance at luring a player that's going to be, like, 80 million pounds, 100 million pounds, 120 million pounds. Like, that's ridiculous money to spend. The women's like it ain't there yet. I understand if you need this rule, even if like
not even
transfer
close.
Fees, right? If transfer fees start becoming like normal, like 5 million, you know, 10 million, something like that, I understand. Like once they get into the millions, okay, now you do need to make sure that teams aren't getting themselves in financial trouble trying to bring in the best players if they can't balance it or can't afford it, right? So I get it, but one, we ain't anywhere close to that yet, and two, the cap is 500K and it's already too low. And it just came out. Like the rule ain't even, I don't even think the rule is like a month. It definitely ain't 2 months old, but it ain't even a month old. And it's already like, it already doesn't make any sense. It's already much too low. And it's, I don't know. It's just, it's something I think was useless to implement right now. And also just makes me a little bit concerned about, okay, all this money, all the investment coming into the league. I didn't even mention the broadcast deal, which brought in, 60 million coming in. Like, teams in the league have money now. This is not the time to do broke shit. And this feels like broke shit to me.
I was going to say, I was like, broke boy behavior. Something we once said about Todd Bowley. The broke boy. Because he wasn't worth $1.5 billion. Anyway, moving on to hyped. Things that we're excited about. Andre, I feel like I see you're hyped in the dock, and I feel like we've hit the drum on her a few times about Ramirez coming to Chelsea. What I'm excited about, the W Gold Cup.
Okay.
It's coming very slowly, but I am excited about it. Like, there are the games that are going to happen there. We're going to get a Brazil versus Colombia. Like, I want to be there. I want to be in the stands. That is what I'm excited about. I'm excited also that it's less cold than before. I know we're only at 40 degrees, but, like, it's better than when I wake up and it was, like, 21 degrees and I had to run the heater in my room all day, because if I didn't, my room would literally become frigid. I've tried a gluten. Oh, since the last time we talked, I tried a gluten-free Oreo, a gluten-free golden Oreo.
Okay.
A real one. Great. Still great if you take out the cream out of the inside and put peanut butter in it. It still tastes like a Nutter Butter. It's actually even better. But yeah, I feel like those are the things I'm hyped about. I feel like I had a real hyped and I like forgot it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll do this again if you remember it. I mean, mine is like we mentioned, this is my Ramirez to Chelsea. I was a little bit big mad that a lot of players, you know, every time in the Men's World Cup, whenever a player performs, like, teams can't wait to throw their money at that player. You know, James Rodriguez is like the most recent, like, big example. Like, he went, like, what was it, Real Madrid? Like, he had a really good World Cup and then, you know, makes a big money move. And that hasn't exactly translated to the women's game yet. And I was a little disappointed because you saw she did to Germany. I feel like if she could do that to Germany, she could do that for your team too, right?
Her so Linda Caicedo cooked them.
Right. So I'm like, I wanted to see that in Nadosia too. I want to see her go to another team as well. Like, I love my Paris FC, my childhood club, Paris FC. But I feel like she should go somewhere else.
Baffled at Andre for those who want to know, saying my childhood club.
My childhood club, Paris FC.
Lyon and PSG. What?
Yes, correct, correct. You heard me. But yeah, so I was a little disappointed. You know, we wrote about her as well when we were in there in Australia and New Zealand, because she was absolutely balling. Her hold up play is ridiculous. So I'm glad to see her from, you know, Levante getting a chance at a big club, because I thought she deserved it immediately afterwards. But it's happening now, and I'm here for it. So I'm happy for her and me and myself. I'm happy for myself.
look, I don't need a private jet, because we know they're terrible for the environment. I just need someone to fund my commercial tickets so I can go to England and around to NWSL markets to see these teams in person, because I want to see it. I do. I really want to see it. And I want to see them up in person. The funny thing is that I absolutely hate watching games on TV. I actually kind of hate it. Now, when you can, like, watch a game in person, you just, like, you gather so much more. So I'm like, I'm trying to go to the most games, but also watch the least amount of games on TV. That's my goal for 2024. And so
I have one goal.
I need a donor to do that.
Right. I have one goal for 2024, and it is to go watch Emma Hayes' Chelsea sometime this season live, because otherwise I will have never seen it, and that's not okay. That does not sit well with my heart.
I feel like we need to take a trip and then do a Diaspora United from abroad.
Yeah,
podcasts do today. I saw 17 of them. They were just like right after the game, like after people left the stadium, they were just like in their podcasting, like in the seats.
It needs to happen. I would absolutely be here for it. It needs to happen. I need to go. I need to go to Kings Meadow, maybe Stamford Bridge, but I kind of want to go to Kings Meadow instead. But yeah, I want to. I feel like I got to do it. If I don't do it, I'm going to be real mad at myself. And I ain't going to lie. Given my work schedule, it ain't looking likely. So we'll see what happens.
We'll find a time. And then I will just magically appear for those matches and then disappear back into the wilderness. But I will magically appear, because I had last weekend off, and I was like, do I fly to England to watch Chelsea Real Madrid and Chelsea Manchester United at the Bridge? Do I do it? And I was real close. And I was like, financially, can I do this? No, but I'll make it work. I said, physically, problem. Can I do this? And my knee was like, absolutely not. And I was like, fine. Because of my knee, I won't go. But Andre, we're going to do some date picking. I'm manifesting Diaspora United on the road. And this time it won't be Australia, where we're in two different countries. Right. <It's> still <Yes. laughs> We'll actually be in person together.
Yes, we need this to happen. I need it to happen. It's got to happen. I was just thinking about in my head. I was like, man, what if it doesn't happen? I'm gonna be real sad. So I need to make it happen. Otherwise, it's gonna be like a life regret. And I try not to have those. So let's see if I can avoid it.
Once Kat's healthy.
Oh, listen.
It's our time. It's our time.
I need to get on a plane as soon as it is. I don't even know how it works. I'm mad. All right. I was going to say something that's going to keep this podcast going for another little while. I'm going to chill for a bit. Thank y'all for listening. Courtney, anything else before we get out of here, or just straight to the bye?
No, we've been talking for ages. We're good. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.